Hi, I'm Andy Reid.
And I'm Mike Porter.
You're listening to Catskill Cabin Conversations, which is aired on the third Tuesday of each month from 2 until 3 p.m. on WGXC Acre 90.7 FM.
On each show, invited guests will be asked to discuss a number of items that they intend to taking with them on their Catskill Cabin getaway. As we discuss their chosen items, it is hoped that you, the listener, will enjoy getting to know that person a little bit better. Today's guest is Brianna Lavaroni. Brianna is 58 years old and was born and raised in the Catskill Mountains. She has been married for 35 years and has two daughters. One is married and one is getting married in February 2018. A granddaughter is due in April. Brianna was a physical education teacher for over 30 years and recently retired. She loves all outdoor activities and most recently has been long-distance hiking on the Appalachian Trail. When not hiking or biking, she and her husband love cruising around on their motorcycles. Brianna, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Welcome.
Thank you.
What type of bike do you have?
I have a Honda Shadow 750.
A Honda Shadow? I don't even know what that means.
That's the style of the bike. It's a Honda. It's 750cc. It's
right. And is this an old bike or is it a new bike? Or?
I think it's a 2006.
I could see you on one of those spiders.
No.
You're a purist?
Not yet.
I was back in Scotland in the summer and my friend, remember we were talking before the show and I was telling you about the doctor?
Yes.
Well, he came and picked me up one night in the spur of the moment in his Harley. And he took me for a spin and I was scared out of my wits. And then he took me onto the throughway because we were going for a coffee up the West End in Glasgow. And I thought, literally, I was holding on for dear life. And I thought, one false move here and I'm dead.
Yeah.
And it was really scary but exhilarating at the same time.
Yeah, we don't like the highways. We like to stay on the back roads.
Yeah.
Cruise around. Yep. How'd you get into motorcycles?
Well, Jay started riding, oh gosh, probably about 15 years ago now, and I was a passenger, and I got bored.
Nice.
And I was like, I don't want to ride on the back anymore. I want to get my own bike, so I got my license. And
cool.
Been riding now probably 6 or 7 years.
Do you guys have the headsets with radios?
We do.
That's cool.
We
and
do.
Can you listen to music through them or just talk?
No, you can listen to music, and if one of us wants to talk to the other one, it cuts the music out.
Oh, okay.
So that overrides the music. And we don't really talk that much, just to, like, you know, reaffirm directions or maybe a change of direction. But mostly we listen.
Who controls the music while you're riding?
Well, we each have our own control.
So you listen to your music. And
yep.
And your husband's listening to his music,
yep.
And it just gets interrupted if either talks, but it's just your own thing.
Absolutely.
Oh, brilliant. See, I thought they had to share it. And so it's like, no, I want to listen to this song. No, I want to listen to that.
No, and after a few seconds of silence, it cuts back to the music.
Oh, okay.
So,
cool.
Yeah, it's a nice feature because then you're separate, but you can still communicate if you need to.
Do you think there will ever be a time when somebody invents a motorcycle ashtray?
So you can smoke
while
you're
riding
a bike?
I bet some of them have ashtrays.
Yeah.
I'm willing to bet that some of the higher end ones, they have cruise control, they have heated handlebars, they have heated seats. They have
heated handlebars. Who's driving
these?
To me,
that's not really, I don't know, that's just too high end for me. We like the simple. I mean, Jay has a Harley and I have my Honda and off we go.
Right.
So,
is it quiet while you're riding, like aside from the music, or is your motorcycle kind of loud?
Mine's very quiet. Yeah. His is a little louder. Harleys are typically louder, but they're done. That's deliberate.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's, people often ask, why are these motorcycles so loud? And it's not because you're trying to be obnoxious. You're trying to be noticed.
Yeah.
Because so many people are blind to motorcycles. They don't pay
attention
to them.
Do you have your leather chaps and all that?
No, but we have we wear leather
we wear tassels
jackets. We have padded.
Do you feel hard when you've got all that on? Do you feel, like, tough?
No, not really.
If you walked into a bar and people turned around and all that.
This isn't Pee Wee Herman, man.
No, not really. No. No, we don't have chaps. No. not really.
So you're going to be a grandma.
Yes, I am.
So you're excited then? The baby's coming?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Can't wait to be a grandmother.
Right.
And this I'll be a nanny. I'm going to be a nanny.
This will be the first one then.
First one.
Is it a boy or a girl?
It's a girl.
And is the baby's name picked out?
Yes, but I probably shouldn't make it public yet.
Right. Okay.
They haven't really made it public yet. But
yeah. Okay.
Well, although the show is going to air the third Tuesday of this month.
She's not due till April.
Oh, that's right, April. Oh, see, I'm getting the wedding and the birth confused. Such major life events you guys are
going
through.
Yeah, so there's a wedding as well.
Wedding in 9 days.
Wow. And where is the wedding?
Sturbridge, Massachusetts.
Sturbridge?
Yeah.
Well, I know it's in Massachusetts now, but whereabouts?
It's about an hour and a half west of Boston.
All right. So you're going there for the weekend or something?
Yeah, the whole weekend.
That'll be exciting, eh?
You guys have some amazing stuff going on. Hiking the Appalachian Trail, weddings, birth. You got to be happy. And the first song you're going to listen to at your Cascade Cabin Getaway is Happy by Pharrell Williams.
Yeah, it doesn't really need any explanation, does it?
Not really.
It's funny because...
It just makes me happy.
So what is this song... This is going to be a daft question. This is even as daft as the question that Mike asked... one of our guests who was a minister.
No, both of them.
Why a Bible?
No, both of them. But it's legitimate. But I liked Pastor's response because pastors take their work on vacation.
I see, right.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So, but yeah, so why this song?
It's, you just can't help but smile when you hear this song. Mm-hmm. And I can't even stand still or sit still when I hear this song. So for me, it was one of those perfect songs. And when it came out and... the first time I played it in the gym, the kids just went nuts.
Yeah,
they just went nuts. And if you want to get kids to move without realizing that they're moving, just put on some kind of music like this, and you'll get action and activity from them that they wouldn't do if you didn't have music in the gym. So 99% of the time when I taught, it was to music.
Mm. Right, that's a great idea.
It's funny you're talking about being taught to music. I was learning how to do chest compressions 2.5 weeks ago, and the woman, and I kid you not, the woman put on the Bee Gees Staying Alive.
Yep.
And we're like, ha 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 ha, stay, and that was the rhythm
it
that
was
you were
perfect
doing.
Yeah.
Staying alive.
But you know they don't do mouth to mouth anymore, Andy, so no. Don't get any ideas.
No tongues,
it's all compression now.
All
no
compression
tongues.
So
sorry, I don't do compressions.
It might seem crazy what I'm about to say. Sunshine, she's here, you can take a break. I'm a hot air balloon that could go to space. With the air, like I don't care, baby, by the way. Because I'm happy. Clap along.
Love is too-
See what I mean, though?
That's the fastest I've moved in about 5 months.
You can't sit still and listen to that.
You were letting a bunny there.
You can't sit still and listen to that song.
That was Happy by Pharrell Williams. That was great.
That was great. Very good choice.
Now, your next item is not just normal socks.
No. Uh-uh.
Fuzzy socks. What's a fuzzy sock?
Well, it's a warm, fuzzy sock.
What, so is it a feeling or is it a actual fuzzy?
Yeah, they're fuzzy. They're fuzzy on the inside and they're
right.
They're just
now,
warm.
I'm going to ask this question, but I'm asking it for a reason. Are they made of cotton or are they synthetic?
They're usually a synthetic wool blend.
Wool blend, yeah.
See, I can't wear them.
Why?
I've got to wear cotton socks because my feet get really sweaty in these.
With wool?
Wool shouldn't. I mean,
no, it's supposed to have the opposite effect.
Not so much wool. The ones that are made of man-made fibers and stuff.
Well, if they're man-made, yeah, they'll sweat. But yeah. If it's a wool, they're usually. I'd like to have my wool be at least an 80%.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I don't have a problem with that. But
wool's where it's at.
Yep.
Wool's where it's at.
Synthetic gets funky.
Yep. Then they get.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Now, when you go hiking and you wear woolly socks?
Yes.
Even in the summer?
Always.
Always.
Yeah. Right. And it's something about wool. It moderates your temperature. It wicks moisture away. It keeps you warm when it's cold out, and it keeps you cool when it's warm out. In the Civil War,
Sheep swear by it.
Thousands of years. You know, they're like, works for me, buddy. Try some. But in the Civil War.
They even work wet.
And they work wet,
even work wet.
And so that's what happened in the Civil War. They would wear these wool uniforms, and it kept them warm when it was cold and cold when it was warm. You know, they're fighting in this 90-degree weather with these big, thick, heavy wool outfits, and they'd start sweating, and it would keep them cool, and just incredible.
Yep.
And like we were saying, it doesn't get really smelly, like synthetics for some reason. You know, I have these synthetic shirts that I've had for years, and I don't know what it is. They work well. You know, they keep you cool, and they stay pretty dry. But I have that thing on for 5 minutes, and it warms up, and it's just like, ugh.
Yeah.
Yikes.
Smells?
Yeah.
Yeah, like you've been in it for a week.
Yeah.
And you only had it on for half an hour.
Yeah, washing the thing like crazy, it doesn't matter. So, and you know, the modern English word sock is derived from the old English word sock, meaning light slipper. I think it's sock. It's spelled S-O-C-C. I don't know. I think that's how it's pronounced. And that came from the Latin soccus, a term to describe a light, low-heeled shoe worn by Roman comic actors and deriving from the ancient Greek word psychos or sickos.
Okay.
So it was old sickos that wore socks when they were doing comedy on stage. You can probably relate, Andy. Did you wear special socks when you did comedy in England, in Scotland? Or?
England.
They were cotton, weren't they?
Oh, come on. They're the same country.
They were always cotton socks.
Cotton socks, yeah. And I have a bit of, the earliest known surviving pair of socks was found excavated from the Nile in Egypt from around 300 to 500 CE, so about 1700 years ago.
I don't know what CE means.
AD. Like
Anno Domini.
Yeah, yeah, the new.
What does CE mean then?
The current era, I believe.
Yes, I think you're right.
Because, you know, based on the Christian calendar, to kind of secularize things, that instead of Anno Domini, which is in the year of our Lord, maybe they changed it to current era because it's secular. Anyway, they found these things, and I saw a picture, and they actually had a space between the big toe and the rest of the feet, and they were meant to be worn with sandals. So apparently, you know, 1,700 years ago in Egypt, they were breaking the number one rule about socks and sandals, that they are not to be worn together.
But who made that rule? Okay.
Yeah, who made that rule?
Who made that rule?
People with a good sense of style, I suppose.
They were not happy.
And I have a bit of sock trivia.
Oh, here we go.
President Bill Clinton and family, they had a pet named Socks. What kind of animal was it? What do you say, Andy?
A guinea pig.
Guinea pig?
It was a dog.
It was a cat.
A
cat that lived until 2008. Lived a long, long time.
Wow.
How long did it live?
They got it in 2001. They adopted it, and then it lived to 2008. So
it was seven?
Like 17. No, I'm sorry. 1991.
Oh, 1991.
And it lived to 2008?
Yeah, you think, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's an old cat.
17. That's not. That's just average.
For a cat, really?
Yeah.
I'm not a cat person.
In 1589, the first sock knitting machine was invented by Reverend William Lee. What country was he from?
William Lee.
William Lee.
Now, my temptation was to say Scotland there, but Lee isn't really a Scottish surname.
Okay.
I'm going to say Wales.
Wales? Brian?
England?
The answer is England.
Ah!
He's English. Yep. Yep. I thought it was going to be Scotland. I was, because everything seems to be invented there, but not in this case. And there's all these phrases, you know, all these references to socks, you know, knock your socks off, sock it to me. Something about socks with the English language.
Yeah, but, I don't know what it is.
Brianna, your next song is You Raise Me Up, sung by Josh Groban. So why that song?
I don't know. That song just, it just hits me in a physical way. I mean, I doesn't matter how many times I hear that song, I tear up. It's just a very powerful song for me. And if I'm in the right place or if I'm in the wrong place, that might be the song that I'd turn on and listen to because it puts me in a better place.
I am strong when I am on
That was Joss Groban, You Raise Me Up. Lovely song.
Could you tell us more about why that song?
That song, it kind of epitomizes the relationship I have with my father. He was my role model. He was my strength. So that's the one that brings him back.
Bree, in the past you had told me stories about traveling to New England and driving at night in the station wagon. Would your dad be driving?
Most of the time.
Be driving then?
Yeah.
And, you mentioned how you'd kind of get in your pajamas and get in the back seat and kind of go to sleep.
Yep.
On the road. And that's really neat. Sounds like you have some great memories of your family. And it's silly things like that, you know, getting into a car late at night to go on a road trip that you remember that it's something so simple and it's not the point of the trip, but that's kind of the things that you remember.
Yeah. A little segue, but I've done a lot of athletic things in my life, marathons, triathlons. I like to do endurance type activities, and I like to find something to challenge myself. And in 1999, I ran my first marathon, and I did the Marine Corps Marathon down in Washington, D.C. And it just so happened that my mother and father were able to come with us. And for me, first, it was a huge milestone. You know, 26.2 miles. It's like, oh my God, I don't know if I can do it, right?
Yeah.
And the way they set that up is you had to get across the one main bridge before a certain time. And if you didn't make it there, then your race was over. And you were still like 4 miles from the finish. Oh. But they wouldn't let you finish because they couldn't stop traffic for that many hours in Washington,
right.
D.C.
Yeah. Right.
So my goal wasn't to finish the marathon. My goal was to get to that mile point. Yeah. And I can remember shortly after crossing that bridge, probably within a half mile of crossing that bridge, there was an overpass that people were lined up on. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people, there were 25,000 people running in that race. And I'm just one of 25,000 people. And up on that overpass, my father was standing up on that overpass with his walking stick. And he always had, and it's now one of my trademarks, a bandana. He always had a bandana with him all the time. And he was standing up on that overpass. He had tied his red bandana to the walking stick, and he was waving it in the air, and he was yelling my name. And I was like, oh my God, what are the odds?
Yeah.
That all these people, I mean, he was nowhere near my mother and Jay and the girls. He had plopped himself on that overpass and was just waiting for me to come under that thing.
Wow.
And it was like, for me, it was like my race was a success right there, and I still had 4 miles to go.
It re-energized you.
Yes, yeah. You know, and it just gave me the extra boost to just
get over the finish
line. I don't even remember running those last 4 miles. It was just like,
yeah.
Oh man, look there, you know, there he is. And that's kind of like just symbolizes the relationship that we had. And
yeah,
so that song just brings that all back.
Brilliant.
Bree, your next item is a family photo album.
Well, we couldn't bring any electronics with us.
Uh-huh.
And if I have my phone, I have pictures of my family. And so I couldn't bring anything electronic. Mm-hmm. So I said, well, I'm going to have pictures of my family because my family is the most important thing to me. I live my life for my family. I live my, you know, everything I do is to, you know, be a better person and for my family. And just looking at their faces just makes me happy. So I would never feel alone or lonely if I had pictures of my family with me. So.
Even if there was a big bear at the door.
Wouldn't care. I would just turn the picture around and say, look, here. Bears don't bother me.
That takes me to my next trivia question.
Yes.
On the Appalachian Trail.
Yes.
In what state are you most likely to run into a bear?
That really depends on who you talk
state.
To. But no. Most people will say it's Virginia.
Virginia?
New York.
The answer I found is New Jersey.
Wow.
I would have never guessed that, but apparently their reasoning was, first of all, I think there are maybe statistically more bear encounters, but New Jersey, I think it was in the 1970s, made it illegal to hunt bears. And so they have the largest bear per person ratio in the United States. Only recently did they start allowing the hunting of bears again. So that's what I found. I don't know if it's
that's interesting.
So you wouldn't think that. New Jersey being pretty urban and it's on the coast and really black bears. I never think of New Jersey as being rural at all. But
well, the parts that the Appalachian Trail goes through, you would not think that you were in New Jersey.
Sure.
Yeah, you people say this is New Jersey. I'm like, this is New Jersey. You were out there. Very, yeah. Very rural. And I guess because it's such a small part of the trail, I guess maybe if they're taking average sightings, that would make sense.
Big bear walks by you with a Sopranos t-shirt.
But we didn't see a single bear except for the poor, poor, pathetic ones in the zoo Bear Mountain, New York. And that was just so pathetic. But
yeah,
no.
That's cruelty.
It is cruelty. But no, we didn't see a single bear.
Yeah, we've spoken before about photographs in the history of photography on the show. A lot of people like to bring pictures. I'm tempted. I love bringing it up. Scottish physicist James Clerk Maxwell, 1861, the first color photo of a tartan ribbon using three different colored filters and combining them to create this color photograph. And that's really fascinating to me. 1861, that's the first year of the Civil War.
And that's amazing.
And a lot of this stuff, when you start looking into it, you know, these innovations, it's always scientists. And some scientist that came up with this amazing, groundbreaking thing that we take for granted today, color photography and
pasteurized milk.
Pasteurized milk.
Light bulbs.
Electricity.
Electricity.
Yeah.
So we owe a lot to 1861,
wow.
First color photograph. And, you know, I think it took a while for that to take off. But it's just amazing. You know, he came up with this idea. He's like, well, if color is based on, you know, different thing, then if I just do these things and combine it together, then it should be a color photograph. And he does it, and it works.
Okay, man.
Yeah.
Well, just the whole concept of the first camera.
Yeah.
How they figured out that, you know, the mechanism to make that image appear.
Oh, brilliant.
Yeah, I know.
Just brilliant. Unbelievable. Amazing. And the first English photographer Edward Muybridge produced the first photo on movement, 1871, which set the stage for the first motion pictures. And motion pictures came around later in the 1890s, really. So that's when movies first came out.
I always try to wonder why people got their names. Edward Muybridge. Did they walk about and tell people in the town, this is Muybridge?
Yeah.
This is Muybridge. Don't cross it.
And I think it's that, because it's spelled E-E-A-D-W-E-A-R-D. So it's Edweird. And then Muybridge is M-U-Y bridge. So I think it's Edward Muybridge. I don't know.
It's Muybridge.
It's Muybridge. Pay a toll. It's Muybridge.
So, Brianna, your next song is You're Still the One, sung by?
Shania Twain.
Good. Now, see, I was in a dilemma here.
As to how to pronounce that?
No, I was unsure if it was You're Still the One or Still the One by Orleans. Still the one that makes me proud. Still the one. So
is that Fraggle Rock?
I don't think so. Fraggle Rock.
Fraggle Rock.
That's the Muppets, man.
And Fraggle Rock.
Maybe the Muppets had Orleans on and they sang that song. Maybe.
Makes a really good impersonator. Could you introduce the next song?
Yeah.
As Quagmire.
Oh.
As Quagmire.
You're Still the One, sung by Shania Twain. Giggity. Giggity goo. All right.
Co-written by Shania Twain and Mutt Lang.
I thought you said Muttley.
Mutt Lang, another interesting name. They got into, I mean, unless it was spelled wrong and his name's Matt, but I'm pretty sure it's
Mutt.
No,
I'm pretty sure it's Mutt.
Yeah, it's Mutt, yeah. Mutt Lang. They got into a relationship in the mid-1990s, although he was 17 years her senior. I think that's how you say that. 17-year difference, which drew a lot of criticism from the press and the public. Yeah. A lot of people are like, this isn't going to work. It's just her doing this for her career. And so they wrote the song to kind of show people, no, you know, this is real and we're in love. At least until 2010.
Right. It didn't last forever, but
by show business standards, that's not so bad.
But it did last longer than people thought would.
Indeed.
Yeah.
So why that song?
I don't know. It's just, it's pretty, to me, it's more in the title. You know, he's still the one.
Are you talking about your husband?
Yep.
Ah, so you do love him?
I do. Yeah. And he's laughing over there.
Hey, RJ still loves you.
He's jumping for joy.
He's laughing over there.
I know it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When I first saw you, I saw love. And the first time you touched me, I felt love. And after all this time, you're still the one.
Shania Twain. I was just telling you that the last time, every time I hear that song, I think of Cadbury's because I feel the same way about chocolate balls as I do.
Still the one.
Still the one.
That Cadbury bar, it's still the one.
Especially the flakes.
Oh, God.
Your next item is a journal.
Oh, I'm a journaler. I've kept journals pretty much all my life.
You have?
Yeah.
That takes a bit of dedication.
Well, I don't write in it every day. It's more one of those where I could take it today and, like, my thought behind this process was, oh, I need to catch up on my journal, which would be perfect in the cabin. You know, I got nothing to do. And so I would, it just way that I spotlight. I don't write down like, well, what did I have for dinner last night? No, it's not that kind of thing. It's more of a highlight type of thing and a reflection. I'm not going to write down, tell you exactly what I've done or where I've been or who I was with. It's more of what took place during a certain time frame.
Yeah. Right.
You know, and we always, I've always journaled our summer trips when we would take them. And most of our summer trips had themes. So we might have done Route 66 one year. We retraced the Lewis and Clark journey one year.
Yeah.
And so that I would journal so that I could have a memory of that. And at some point in the future, I'd like to put them together and create something more permanent for myself and for right. my kids.
And you were saying that you guys had an RV that you would take?
Yeah, one type or another. I mean, we've had Class C's, Class A's, and now we have a pull trailer, but we started this when our youngest was about 15 months old.
Yeah.
And we traveled every summer for the next 14 years.
All across the United States.
All across the United States. We've the only place in the United States... Well, in North America, pretty much, is that we haven't been is Hawaii.
Yeah.
Because we couldn't take the RV there.
So you drove to Alaska?
We drove to Alaska. We've done every province of Canada.
Tell me, how do you drive to Alaska?
Very slowly.
Like, is there, because I'd seen in World War II, I think a road was being cut to connect the continental United States with Alaska up through Canada. And it was this really treacherous endeavor because it was like brutally cold and snowy. And
it's the Alpine Highway.
Yeah.
Or now it's also called the Alaskan Highway. And it's perpetually in a state of disrepair.
Yeah.
So there's constant road construction going on.
Because the ice.
Because the ice, because of the temperature, the frost heaves, just... You know, mm-hmm. and they have such a short window to work on it.
Yes.
And, of course, that's the same window that people want to be driving on it.
Yeah.
And you can either go across Canada or, and that's what we did when we went across Canada on the way up. And then when we came back, we dropped down into the United States near Glacier National Park out in Montana.
Okay.
And came back the top of the United States.
Oh, nice.
So that we didn't retrace the exact same route. But we left, like... 2 days after school ended, and we got back 2 days before school started.
Oh my gosh, what a trip.
It was 11,500 miles.
Wow. Who did most of the driving?
We both are equal drivers.
Yeah, on and
we
off.
Would do shifts.
Wow. And yeah. what do you do while you're driving?
Me, I talk.
Talking.
He just drives. when we did the Alaska trip, we had a small 25-foot Class C. You know, Class C motorhome is one of the, it looks like the cab over pickup truck, but it's all connected.
Yes.
So you have free rein. The kids could get up and walk around. They could have lunch. They could go take a nap. And usually when one of us, like when I was driving, usually he would be resting. I wasn't a good person sleeping in a vehicle. So I didn't usually. So I usually had one or the other of the kids as a co-pilot. And they would map out our route on a real map with highlighters.
Yeah.
And so we taught them how to actually read maps.
Probably pre-GPS for you guys. You were having to read maps.
Yeah, it was 1999.
Yep, so.
Yeah, we didn't have any GPSs. And we wouldn't have used them anyways because we wanted the kids to actually know how to read a map. And so we would say, all right, here's, you know, where we headed. You know, where's the next stop? Mm-hmm. And, yeah.
So what would you say is the three, off the top of your head, the three nicest states that you've been in?
Oh, God. Wow, they're so different. They're so different. But probably one of my favorites is Montana.
Montana?
Montana.
Yeah, I'd like to go there.
It just has so much diversity. And it's just a beautiful place. I mean, they call it the Big Sky State, and it really is. But, yeah, Montana would be one of my favorites. Maine would be another one.
Okay.
Absolutely. Having been to every one of them but Hawaii, it's really hard to pick three. It really is.
Mm.
But to be honest with you, New York is one of the most beautiful states in this country.
Yeah.
And I don't think a lot of people realize that because when they hear New York, they automatically assume
Manhattan,
Long Island, Manhattan. They don't have a clue what we have up in this area.
Yeah.
So New York would have to be there, you
right.
know.
Right,
but
yeah.
I just, there's so much about each state that just has its own appeal.
Sure.
I want to go to some of these national parks, you know, with the geysers and all that, and the, you know, redwoods. And,
yeah.
You know, I just want to go and see all that.
It's impressive. We went out a couple times in the past few years, once for Nicole's cousin's wedding, and then this past summer to visit my sister and her husband. And we, the first time, we didn't do it this most recent time, but we went to the park and saw the redwoods. And I can't remember the name of the park right now.
Well, it could have been Sequoia. Yeah, or it could have been Redwood.
San Francisco.
That was probably Redwood National Park, National Forest.
Yeah. Did you drive through them?
I don't think on that trip we drove through one, although I did walk through one.
Right.
Which is just unbelievable, these gigantic trees. And, you know, we were talking about it in class actually today, how in, you know, early 19th century, we were cutting these things down.
Yeah.
You know, just industry and making money. And then people are like, wait a minute. How long did this take to grow? You know, 1,000 years. So once it's gone,
that's it.
It's not coming back for another 1,000 years. So that's when, you know, Teddy Roosevelt and the conservationist and preservationist John Muir and Gifford Pinchot threw on the brakes and said, we got to start changing our policies to, because like Teddy Roosevelt said, we don't have a Louvre or a Parthenon in the United States. We don't have this ancient heritage that we can pass on to our children through our culture and our tradition and our architecture. We have instead these natural wonders. That is our heritage. That's our legacy. And that's something that all Americans should have access to and all Americans should enjoy and treasure. And I think that's so important and so powerful.
I think, thank goodness for him.
Oh my,
because we would have lost so many of our national treasures. And,
and who inspired them?
A Scotsman, John Muir.
Exactly.
Yes. Yeah.
Yep. The man who slept in a pine tree to see what it felt like to be a pine tree.
Yes.
He was a hippie of the 1880s.
He was a hipster.
Yep.
Yeah. But I'm sorry, Bree. What were you saying?
No, I was just saying that, you know, it's so important, but so many of our young people don't get a chance to experience that.
Yeah.
And so they don't have that same perspective. And that was one of the things that was so important for us as parents. Our trips were fun, but they were also, there was an educational piece.
Whether
that educational piece was, you know, the national park motto, you know, take only pictures, leave only footprints, you know, leave no trace. And it reflected, because both of our kids have a true appreciation of nature and you know, how important it is, our resources. But we've been to so many of the national parks across this country, and they're just, it's amazing.
It's a truly magnificently beautiful country.
Yeah.
It really is.
Yeah. I got to travel more.
Yeah, me too.
Darn it.
Well, I got lots of places I want to go back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We need to get on the road again.
Oh, yeah.
On the road again. Nice segue, Andy.
Impressive. He's good. He's good.
Yeah.
My first segue.
Are you going to sing with it?
So,
that was good.
your next song is by who?
Willie Nelson.
On the Road Again.
On the Road Again.
Willie Nelson is one of my favorites.
He's one of my favorites, too.
Oh, brilliant.
I love him.
I've seen Willie live twice, and I just kind of get enough of him.
Yeah.
He sounds a wee bit like Stephen Hawking now. God love him. Well, he sounds a wee bit like Stephen Hawking.
Why?
On the road again.
I love him.
On the road again.
Has he had some dental work done, or what happened?
No, he's struggling to sing now. Oh. He kind of like just talks.
He kind of have a little bit of a drawl. Oh.
Wait to get on the road again. The life I love is making music with my friends, and I can't wait to get on the road again. On the road again. Going places that I've never been, seeing things that I may never see again. I can't wait to get on the road again. On the road again. Thank you.
that was On the Road Again by Willie Nelson, performed by Willie Nelson. You're listening to Catskill Cabin Conversations on WGXC Acra, 90.7 FM. WGXC is community radio, so if you feel compelled to donate at any time, check out WGXC.org and give what you can to keep shows like Catskill Cabin Conversations going. Here on the show, we have Brianna Lavaroni. You were hiking the Appalachian Trail recently.
Yes, I was.
Did this song ever come to mind?
Just about every day. Sometimes first thing in the morning we'd head out and I'd be thinking, where are we going? Oh, there we're going. And I would just substitute On the Road for On the Trail and just sing it to myself as I went along and
On the trail again.
I just can't wait to get on the trail again and substitute all the other words for where we were headed and what we were doing.
Now, and Brianna, you're a phys ed teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And love the outdoors, outdoor activities.
Ex-physic.
Well, you
know, retired. Ex makes it sound like I gave it up. I just retired.
But I think at heart, there's probably a part of that that will always be with you, something that you always identify with.
No? Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. So, but and you love physical activity. You know, it was your career. And did you knew going into the Appalachian Trail what to expect. Certainly you had read and you've hiked probably countless miles in your life. Was there anything though that surprised you about your experience on the trail?
There were quite a few things that surprised me. I mean, going in, I had apprehensions because I have a definite fear of heights.
Yeah.
And that was something that concerned me because I knew there were going to be places, especially in the White Mountains and in Southeast Maine, where there were going to be some very steep climbs that you even had to have rebar and sometimes ropes to assist you to get up these steeps. And I was surprised that I actually was able to conquer that fear. I was like, this is awesome.
Wow.
You know, the other thing was how rocky some of the trail was and how you think to yourself, that would have been an easier way for the trail to go. Why did they make it go this way? You know, and you're staring at a much easier path and you're looking forward going, why are we going that way? But it wasn't ours to choose. We had to follow the blazes. So
now, can I just bring to mind a comment that your husband made on his show?
Sure.
He said that, and I quote him, that at times, they would be climbing steep climbs, and he would be trying to make his way up, but with one hand on his wife.
This is very true.
Would you like to comment on that?
This is very true. Again, that fear of heights, but there were times where you were literally on your hands and knees climbing.
With one hand from your husband on you.
He would either have possibly a hand on my shoulder or just, you know, just to making sure that I wasn't backsliding or saying, I'm not going. You know? And there were many times where I needed an assist because there was such a large step between one boulder and another boulder. And there was just no physical way for me to make that stride without. And there wasn't anything to grab. There were no roots. There were no trees. There was no rope. So there was the hand.
Yeah.
And yeah, he gave me a hand up.
You know, I am
skillfully done. You never took the bait there.
No, I didn't.
Some people that are thinking about hiking the Appalachian Trail, they say, okay, I want to go from the south to the north, from Georgia to Maine, because that seems to be what everyone does. Although if you do it that way, you have to leave early enough that you get there before they close.
Right.
What is Mount Katahdin?
Mount Katahdin about mid-October, depending on the weather.
Closes down, so you can't finish. You've maybe been hiking since April. Mm-hmm. That's when people leave. Sometimes hiking through knee-deep snow, even in the south, in the month of April. So some people do it that way. Some people will hike from the north to the south because it won't close. Although if you do that, inevitably you will still run into snow because, you know, in the north you can't leave earlier than probably May or June.
Early June.
So then you're still hiking through November or maybe even December down into Georgia. So how did you guys do it?
We did what was called a flip-flop.
flip-flop.
And it ended up being a flip-flop flip. because we couldn't leave until the end of June. There was no way we could leave from either end.
Because you had to retire.
And make it. So we left the day after I retired, literally. And we started in, not in the middle, but in, we started Bear Mountain in New York. And we went north. And the plan was to go to Katahdin and then come back to Bear Mountain and then go south.
Yeah.
And, you know, life has a funny way of interrupting. You know, I don't know many people who can take 6 months out of their lives and not expect something to happen. But yeah. So we ended up having to kind of rethink our plans. But we did get back on in Bear Mountain and we did go south. So we still have about 1,000 miles to complete.
Yeah.
But we're going back out in a couple of weeks.
After the wedding.
Yeah, after the wedding and before the baby.
Yeah.
But
do you feel that you need to get into a bit of training before you go?
I'm always training. I'm one of these people that if I don't do something physical every day, I'll go nuts. Really.
Yeah.
I really am. You know, it could be something as simple as taking a walk, or I have get on a bicycle and ride for an hour or something. But you can't really train for it.
Yeah.
People say, yeah, you got to get in shape. It's like, well, we're in shape, but you can't really train for it other than going out and doing it.
It's such a unique, how can you train for hiking 8 hours a day, 16 miles, you know,
with 32 pounds on your pack, on your back.
That is the training I've read and to a much lesser degree experienced myself in the very minimal hiking that I've done compared to the Appalachian Trail. But it does help to have a foundation of fitness under there.
Absolutely.
Some people do dive in. Some people are like, I'm going to hike the Appalachian Trail, and they have no idea what they're doing, never gone on a walk in their lives.
Those are the people that generally drop out within a within 100 to 200 miles.
Yeah, it's just too
And
too
we
much.
Didn't want that to happen. So, you know, being physical all our lives, that part wasn't going to, we just knew that we were going to have to just get used to it as we went.
Yeah.
And
good.
It's what we did.
Your last item is a sketch pad.
Yeah.
Why a sketch pad?
Because I like to draw.
Yeah.
I like to draw, and I'm not really good at it, but it totally relaxes me. So if I want to just do something that just gives me a chance to totally just mellow, I might just sit down with a sketch pad and just draw a bunch of trees or mountains or flowers. Or I can't do people.
Talking about landscapes then?
Mm-hmm. I can't do people. And I don't even do animals very well, but
I'm telling you, it'd be better than me, I'll tell you.
No, but I can make a stick figure do just about anything you want, but I can't make a person. I mean, I can make a diagram of a stick figure shooting a basketball, but I can't draw a person to save my life. But it relaxes me.
Yeah. That's all it matters. Yeah. It relaxes you and you enjoy doing it.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter if it's a stick figure or a tree.
Yeah.
Right, that's what I figure. You know, I don't do it to show anybody.
Yeah.
So.
Well, we're coming down to the end here. Brianna, thank you so much for being on the show.
Yeah,
you're welcome.
It's been a good giggle.
Been a pleasure.
Enjoyed it.
We have just one last question to ask you.
Okay.
And it is, how do you take your coffee?
Light and sweet.
Light and sweet.
Yep.
Real sugar?
No, I use Trevia. I use Stevia.
Cream?
Yeah.
Nice.
What kind of coffee?
I like all different kinds of coffees, but I do like flavored coffees.
Right.
So I'll do flavored, but I'll do just straight up coffee if that's what's there.
Well, what kind of coffee did you take with you on your camping experiences? Because I know Mike took some of these
Starbucks beers.
Yeah,
we didn't. We went totally coffee free except when we were in town.
If you're not hooked, then it's no big deal.
Yeah. And I guess we weren't as hooked as we thought we were because we didn't go through any kind of, I gotta have coffee. So, but when we got into towns, we'd have a cup of coffee.
After all that hiking, did you notice it? Did it have more of an effect from all that hiking? You drink some caffeine and you're like, wow.
It did kind of kick in a little faster after 5 or 6 days without caffeine. You're like, whoa. But, you know.
Well, thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
Yeah, it's been great. Yeah,
thank you.
Thank you very much.
Hi, I'm Brianna Lavaroni, and you've been listening to Catskill Cabin Conversations on WGXC Acra 90.7 FM. Special thanks to George, Gordon, and Billy from the band White for the theme music, and to everyone at WGXC. Thanks.